Oh, we give thanks for this precious day, for all gathered here and those far away, for the time we share with love and care. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Kim Bellinger. I'm a member here of this Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, and I welcome you. Come on in. Whatever the faiths you have known or the flags of your heritage, you are welcome here. Whoever you are and whomever you love, you are welcome here. Whether you are a parent, a co-parent, a step-parent, a grandparent, or you love your parents, you are welcome here. Whether you ran in here today, walked in, rolled in, or hobbled in, you are welcome here. We welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. I would especially like to welcome our visitors and guests. If you're curious about this place and the people within, I encourage you to stick around for a coffee and to talk with us after the service. Before we get started, I'd like to draw your attention to the announcements in the order of service. There's some really yummy-looking pancakes in here. Especially to this new colorful chair back here. This is going to be the RE helper chair, and it says a little bit about it in the service, but do you see this rainbow chair that Elk is sitting in? This is a new idea that we have here. Every once in a while, we need an extra helper in the religious education classrooms, and it might not happen every week, but if we need an extra hand, if you are willing to help in a classroom and be called on to help, please sit in that chair, and you may be called on to come into the classroom. I have an additional announcement. Dick Beeman and Tara Dean invite you all to the opening reception of their art exhibit this Friday, October 7th, from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at Redina's Coffee Shop in Aggieville. The show will run for the entire month of October. Sorry. I just got organized. Please draw your attention inward in the spirit of the chalice lighting with this poem from Mary Oliver. Wild geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Please stand, as you are able, and join me in singing opening hymn number 40, Morning Hangs a Signal.
Thank you.
Now is the time in our service when we share those significant joys and sorrows we carry in our hearts and minds. By sharing heavy burdens, they are lightened. By sharing joys, they grow. Please wait for the microphone so that all will hear you.
Michael Oldfather, Thursday I spent the day with Jack Warren. We drove to Wichita for him to have an eye exam and spent a great day together. It was a beautiful day and lots of conversation on the way. About an hour after we got home, I got a call from Metalark that he'd had a massive stroke, and he is now in the hospital. He's in 353, but he's moved back and forth a bit from ICU. I think the next move, however, will be to Metalark, where he will be entering the hospice program. He's had a great life. Thursday, he would be, if he makes it, he'll be at 85. Great guy, and many of you who have been around a while know about all of his exploits, and we have started talking about the memorial service, which will be here sometime, I'm sure, not too distant future.
John Extell. My wife Judy and I have a great joy to report. We spent 10 days in Greece visiting relatives there and hopping from an island or two. And we had Sophie, our daughter Sophie, with us, 30 years old now. And she showed us that GPS can actually detect the smallest, almost invisible paths in a mountain area. And also she could find the best restaurant in Athens for us to eat at. So it was a great time.
Good morning, Sybil Perkins. I'd just like to ask everyone to please continue to keep Barbara Hacker in your thoughts. She has moved back to Bramlage now, but is not up to any calls or visitors. So.
I neglected to mention that 34 years ago today, Kathleen made a bad decision, and it still is around to haunt her. But.
There are any other joys or concerns? We honor those joys and sorrows, spoken and unspoken. Children, young and old, kids at heart, toddlers and teenagers, come join me up front for a story. Jocelyn, hide your face from me too. So I have a real question. You hear all this all the time, but I really want to know. How are you feeling today? Jake?
Happy.
Happy. Jake's feeling happy and joyful? Awesome. Kaya?
Sleepy.
Mm-hmm. Leah? Hungry and tired. Yes. Good? Good. Is anybody feeling angry? No. Or maybe frustrated? Is it okay to feel angry or frustrated sometimes? Yeah. Yeah. It's okay to feel happy too, right? Yeah. Do we always have to feel happy? No. Yeah, it would be super boring, right? It's okay to feel not happy all the time. Yes, Keaton? You wanted to stay home and sleep. Yeah. I understand that feeling. How is she feeling?
Crazy.
Well, I feel you wanted to stay in your bed. Yeah, I kind of did a little bit too. And it's okay to feel all those things. All of those feelings are okay. I feel a little bit sick today, but I'm happy to be here. Maybe if it was a week ago, I wouldn't have been because I've kind of had a cough. But sometimes I feel sad. Sometimes I feel angry. and sometimes I'm happy. And all of those things are okay. So it doesn't matter how old you are. Those things are okay. So I'm going to read this story, which you probably have seen before and read before, but it's kind of relevant to what we're talking about today. We're talking about healing, and part of that is being okay with not always feeling great. So this story is by Dr. Seuss, one of my favorites, and it's called My Many Colored Days. Some days are yellow, some are blue. On different days, I'm different too. You'd be surprised how many ways I change on different color days. On bright red days, how good it feels to be a horse and kick my heels. On other days, I'm other things. On bright blue days, I flap my wings. Does anybody ever feel that way? Like flying? Yeah, that's a good feeling, isn't it? Some days, of course, feel sort of brown. Then I feel slow and low, low down. Then comes a yellow day. I am a busy, buzzy bee. Gray day, everything is gray. I watch, but nothing moves today. Then all of a sudden, I'm a circus seal. That's how I feel on orange days. Green days, deep, deep in the sea, cool and quiet fish. That's me. Anybody ever feel that way? Yeah, me too. On purple days, I'm sad. I groan. I drag my tail. I walk alone. But when my days are happy pink, it's great to jump and just not think. Then come my black days, mad and loud. I howl, I growl at every cloud. Then comes a mixed up day, and wham, I don't know who or what I am. But it all turns out all right, you see, and I go back to being me. Does anybody ever feel colors when they feel a certain way? Jake, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do too. Red is anger. Does anybody ever draw with those colors or make art with those colors?
Mm-hmm. Mommy seen a bird that was red.
You saw a bird that was red?
And he was
red. Well, all of those are important to you and to us. So thank you for sharing. He was sad. Thank you for sharing. Now it's time to go to your classes.
This morning we have a special occasion. We welcome the adults who have become Unitarian Universalists through and members of this congregation through their signing the membership book and indicating their wish to walk with us. Two or three times a year we welcome new members into our congregation. People can make a commitment to membership at any time based on their particular inclinations and experience by talking either with membership chair Shirley Hobrock or with me. But now is a good time to recognize new members as we've just completed a Path to Membership class. So I'm going to call the names of everyone who's joined and invite them to come forward. And Ashley Phelps and William Mitchell, Matthew Ebersole, and Michelle Hill, and Deepak Sobramoni has also joined but is not present this morning. So, our new members, each you each UU congregation defines who can join and how that happens. And membership looks simple because all that's required is to sign the membership book. We don't hold a creed. Nothing in particular needs to be believed or recited. At the same time, membership in this fellowship and in any UU congregation can be difficult because you have joined a community searching for truth when truth can be elusive. Membership means that you are part of a congregation struggling for justice, knowing that the struggle can be long. Membership means that you've joined a people who strive to live in loving relationship with each other. And these are not easy things, so I congratulate you on your willingness to take this step. Do you, the new members of this congregation, freely enter into membership of this fellowship, accepting the privilege and responsibility of membership? Oh, good. I heard it out loud, and not just the head nod. It's good to hear it out loud so that it's actually an affirmation. To the gathered congregation, each new member brings unique joys and sorrows, skills and abilities, thoughts and beliefs into our community. And with every new member, we become a new congregation. Do you welcome these persons into membership enthusiastically?
Yes.
All right. So we accept each of you fully into our ranks. We formally extend to you the fellowship of this congregation in recognition of the bond that already exists between us and the hope of that connection growing stronger every day. And I think Shirley has some things for you. including name tags. So you are now a part of us, and we of you, and may our days together be joyous. Please be seated. Of course, joining is but a beginning. We become a new and more diverse congregation thanks to the presence of all our members, new and long term. Please know that no congregation is perfect. A time may come when the fellowship may disappoint you. A time may come when through action or inaction you fail the fellowship. But know that the covenant between us offers the hope of healing as long as we stay in relationship with each other. The power of covenant does not mean that it doesn't matter what happened when something goes wrong, but it does assert that what's even more important is what happens next. How we reach out to one another and renew the covenant. So we are a congregation composed of members, and the gifts of those members in time and talent, but also in money, makes this congregation what it is and in time what it will be. Our passing of the plates is more than a way of taking up money. It's also a sign and symbol of our reliance on ourselves to make this fellowship what it best may be. And know that now those plates are going to come around.
This is a Facebook post, August 4th, 2016, by Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote, "Eat, Pray, Love." My apologies for my voice. Sometimes our transformations bring out the best in us, and sometimes they do not. When the ground breaks open because of an earthquake, you can be certain that everything, absolutely everything, will be upturned, unearthed, or cracked open. When you get cracked open, you will not always love what you discover about yourself. You wish you were a better person, whatever that means. You wish you had handled this or that crisis with more grace. You wish you were stronger. You wish you were more certain about things. You wish you could go back and have that conversation all over again and do it more wisely. You wish you were more forgiving. You wish you were more honest. You wish you were less judgmental. You wish you were less emotional. You wish you had figured things out sooner or better or smarter. Sometimes you must face the truth that you have caused pain to yourself. Sometimes that you have caused pain to others. In short, you wish you were different. And wishing that you were different always, always, always hurts. And this is all very natural. But we can choose in these difficult moments of self-doubt and regret and confusion whether or not we are going to hate ourselves for any of it, or whether we are going to practice self-love. The parts of yourself that you do not love are terribly vital because they demand that you dig deep, deeper than you ever thought you would have to dig, in order to summon compassion and forgiveness for the struggling human being whom you are. And until you learn to treat that struggling human being whom you are with a modicum of empathy and tenderness and love, you will never be able to love anyone or anything with the fullness of your heart. And that would be a great shame. Because that's what we all want, isn't it? This is what we all come here for. To learn how to love each other with the fullness of our hearts. Please know this. Whenever you withhold love from yourself, you are withholding love from the world, period. We really need you to stop doing that. The world has enough problems without you withholding any more love. Please understand that these difficult parts of yourself, the shameful parts, the regretful parts, and those episodes of your biography that are so spiky and troublesome and contradictory and embarrassing that you simply don't know what to do with them, please understand that these difficult parts of yourself are your ultimate teachers in compassion. Those parts of yourself are where you must begin learning how to love. And so now, when I suffer and struggle, I ask myself, what part of you is hurting, Liz? And how can we love it, even as you are hurting? There is no part of myself anymore that I do not believe is deserving of love. And that's good news. Because the only way I'm ever going to learn how to love any of you beautiful freaks, by which I mean all 7 billion of you gorgeous, unpredictable, troubled, weird, contradictory, struggling, devastatingly inspiring, broken, and perfect humans with whom I share this difficult planet, is if I can learn how to love my own freaky-ass self, too. If I can accept me, dear ones, I can accept anyone.
Wow. So sometimes everything cracks open, like Chris said, or like Elizabeth Gilbert says. Sometimes it's not as much of a cracking, it's more of a dull sense of something's not right. What do you do with that? There's lots of options, but you know, you can get therapy, you can talk to someone, you can love yourself gently, you can make art, sometimes all of those things. I'm not an expert on all of those things, but earlier this year, I was working at the Manhattan Art Center, and I was the chair of the gallery committee, and Pawnee Mental Health came to us and wanted to do an art exhibit on health, hope, and restoration for their 60th anniversary. And it sounded great, but we didn't really know what to do with that. We had lots of questions, like who would participate? Is this for your clients? Is this for artists? Do you want us to do it? Do you want to do it? We didn't know what they wanted. So we had lots of questions and meetings. And as we started narrowing in on it, we became concerned about how would we curate the art? Where would it come from? And how would we determine if it was acceptable for a show like this, for a mental health exhibit? That seemed like a very big undertaking, and I didn't feel qualified for that. But we realized it was very important to do this. One of the gallery committee members is also an art therapist, and she and I both realized that it was very important for the artists who would participate in the show to share their message, to share their process, also for the community to see the healing effects of art. Not everyone understands that art can be healing. They think it's just sort of this thing that people do in their basements or something on their spare time or because they don't want to get a real job. And that happens, but it's also sometimes people do it because they don't know what else to do. We had an art exhibit a few years ago that was, I can't remember the artist's name, but he was a man who was a janitor for the schools, and his son got sent to the Iraq War, and he didn't know what to do with his anxiety, and so he started making art out of corrugated cardboard that he found in the recycling bin, and he started cutting it and making portraits out of it, and now he's an exhibiting artist, and he travels around, and he did that because he didn't know what else to do with himself. There's a lot of stories like that. We decided that because we couldn't clarify what people needed to go through in order to be in the part of, or in the show, we decided that if you identified with experiencing healing through the process of making art, then you qualified to be in our show, and we wouldn't ask questions. We wouldn't ask, why do you think you qualify? Because that's not up to us to decide. So we accepted everyone. Among the artists who are exhibiting, there are several teenagers. There is a drama therapist, an art therapist, a rape victim, several people who struggle with depression, and one who paints with his own blood on the anniversary of his failed suicide attempt, among other people. We gave the opportunity for the artists to remain anonymous if they didn't want people to know their stories, but we also gave people the opportunity to share their artist statements, to share a little bit of their experience about the making or just about their own process, and that's where the real power is in the show. I myself have two pieces in the show that I made last year when I began taking an encaustics class from Ann Carter, a local artist. I've experimented with a lot of different art media, but encaustics felt really good to me, and it felt like I was able to work through some of my own stuff in making it. If anybody doesn't know what encaustics is, it's painting with wax, and it's not just making a painting. I think of it more of layering of wax in images and ephemera. And so what you do, in short, is you take a board and you layer melted wax, and then you heat it, and then you layer colors of pigments or wax, and you can embed images or almost anything into it. And in between each layer, you have to heat it, and it melts back to itself, and you can't control that very well. It's sort of out of your control. And that's what I loved, is I'm sort of a perfectionist, and I had to let go. And I worked with some images, some photographs that I had taken of some personal places for me, places where I grew up. And to me, by the process of making this was powerful for me. So, next page. Sorry. So rather than go into a reflection on my own healing process, I would rather just read my artist statement that's in the show. Four years ago, I felt like I was sinking into a sea of uncertainty. The foundation of my family was crumbling, and letting go of the perception of my identity was suffocating. I had to escape so I could breathe again. I returned to my source, the lakes of Michigan where I grew up, retreating to the place where my sister and I once swam, where we believed we could truly become mermaids in the lagoon, reminded me of the hopeful and strong person I once was. I saw the contrast of my past and present self, and she had changed. I wanted to be happy and strong again, go back to being hopeful. Making these pieces a few years later was a healing process for me. The encaustic process allowed me to create a sort of memoryscape of that time. The images of my spiritual beaches weren't enough. Layering blue and green and indigo wax, carving and scraping into it, covering it with India ink and wiping it clean again was reflective of my own process. It wasn't linear, I had no plan, and I couldn't just gloss over the ugly bits. This encaustic was frustrating at the start, but then became colorful, but it was still shallow, then ruined once again. And then the authenticity and beauty was revealed to me when the ink got stuck in the grooves, and I stopped trying to hide it with color. Beauty comes from the darkness as well as the light. I have changed, yet have always been myself, hopeful, sometimes strong, and now authentic. If this exhibit, the Art of Healing exhibit we called it, intrigues you, I invite you to go walk through it, to read the artist statements, to look into the art. The exhibit is open now through next Sunday at the Manhattan Art Center. Now, I'm going to sing again. Please stand as you are able and join me in singing hymn number 83, Winds Be Still.
Experience while I was in divinity school that changed my understanding of myself. I had poured my heart, my identity, and myself into a huge application. I think it was like 40 pages, an application to a program of clinical pastoral education. And I was rejected. It wasn't the first time I had ever failed. I have a whole history of failure and know how to deal with it pretty well, usually. But because this, so much of this application was so personal, it felt like a personal rejection. Plus, it was a real bump in the road. I was on a schedule. I needed a CPE placement for the summer to stick to my 3-year plan to get through divinity school and be ready for ordination. People usually take 4 years. Mine was a 3-year plan. I went and talked to a beloved professor, Richard Valentassis. He was an Episcopal priest who had once been a Greek Orthodox, but he was straight but very supportive to BGLTQ people. And that was way before Gene Robinson, before it was okay for Episcopal priests to take that position. He said something that I would never forget. He said, "You have to be careful where you do CPE because you've been a victim." I don't like the victim word. I had never identified as a victim. But tears came to my eyes. I knew CPE was considered a really tough program, learning to be with people who were ill, who were dying, and even harder, learning to be with yourself, to know where your hurts are held so that you can find a way to be with others without triggering your own issues. And my best coping mechanism for this had long been simple. Denial. If you don't own up to the hurts, maybe they're not really real. Until the Reverend Dr. Valentassis said those words, "You've been a victim." And I turned over what he'd said to me. He knew I was a lesbian. He knew pieces of my story. He didn't even know the deepest hurts. But I did. And his words put me in touch with them and started a healing process. Healing is not a lot of fun. But if you are to live a whole life rather than one cut off from your full being, healing is required. Healing is required because wounds are not optional. Wounds come with life. Buddhism has it right. Suffering exists. Death, disease, injury, hurt feelings, abandonment. People receive messages that they are insufficient, inadequate, unloved, unlovable, wound. Wound, wound. Some people get more wounds than others. Some are lucky enough to be born into loving homes with little disruption or hurting. But even there, some hurt will come. Their grandmother dies. They break a leg or get pneumonia. They struggle with schoolwork or with sports. Little disruptions and hurts that still need healing. Other people are wounded in ways that are so big, I can't figure out how they survived. I used to work with emotionally disturbed children. And as challenging as their behaviors often were, when I read their records and saw what had happened to them, I often could only marvel at their resiliency. When I saw how much they had survived, I had faith in their ability to heal. More mental health practitioners today are engaging in trauma-informed care, recognizing that people's traumas, particularly as children, but even as adults, when those are severe traumas, participating in warfare or being raped, for examples, that these traumas take on a life of their own in the body and mind that leads to physical and mental disease. And Many of these practitioners have learned that working to heal the trauma can restore the balance so that the disease is relieved. My partner Jane used to work in prisons as a social worker. And when she would meet with prisoners for orientation, she'd meet with a whole group of people coming into the prison. She'd talk about the high rates of mental illness and substance abuse among prisoners. And these new prisoners would mostly sit slouched and bored and not engaged. And then she'd start to talk about trauma. And suddenly, people were paying attention. Violence, hurt, abandonment, degradation. She talked about how these contributed to mental illness and substance abuse. And she had the rapt attention of everyone. They listened because they were hearing their story told. They were wounded. They needed healing. So what do I mean by healing? The Collins Dictionary of Medicine says that healing is a, and I quote it here, homeostatic function of the body and occurs automatically unless prevented by infection, continuing injury of any kind, radiation, cancerous change, the presence of foreign material, or great age. Now, part of that is good news. Healing is a homeostatic function of the body. That means a body tries to return to balance, homeostasis, without us doing much of anything. Many of the things we know as physical symptoms, such as fever and inflammation, are signs that our bodies are doing their natural built-in process of healing. That's not always enough, though. On a physical basis, the wound can be too deep or too serious for the body to handle it through normal mechanisms. And that's when we are really happy that we live in an age of antibiotics or surgery or chemotherapy, when we are glad that there are medical procedures to help our bodies refine homeostasis. Many of the wounds we have are not physical, but are emotional or spiritual. More and more research shows how the physical, emotional, and spiritual are all tied together, both in terms of wounds and in terms of healing. But it can be useful to think of them as separate as we're trying to define what's going on with healing. Emotional wounds, like physical wounds, bring on symptoms that our bodies are doing their natural built-in process of healing, because we have a built-in emotional process of healing as well as a physical process. The symptoms are different from the physical ones. Instead of fever and inflammation, we have tears and fears, anxiety and anger. Our emotional system tries to rebalance itself. We may find ourselves more tired than usual or have a craving for physical affection. Or we may need more personal space. These are normal responses to emotional wounds that allow us to heal naturally. Just like healing a scrape or a bruise. When the wounds are deeper, though, we may need more. Often the first thing we need is recognition that a wound exists. Sometimes we don't find the wound until it has grown over and found a kind of homeostasis that hasn't really healed with the wound, but only hidden it. From time to time, it breaks open unexpectedly. Just as sometimes you find yourself in tears for no reason you can figure out. And that's what had happened with me in the story I started with. Now, we all probably come close to sharing a view of what physical and emotional wounds and healing mean. Let me say a word about spiritual wounding. Spiritual wounds according to Flora Slosson Woolner, a spiritual director, writer, and retired United Church of Christ minister. Spiritual wounds come from coercive belief systems and spiritual practices. Insistence on belief and emotional manipulation in a spiritual setting, often by a charismatic leader, harms people spiritually, no matter what that leader's or belief system's particular perspective. The wounds that come from these settings can produce guardedness around our beliefs, a desire to keep them private and protected. It can lead to passivity in religion, leaving one's decisions to someone else, or it can lead to defensiveness and defiance, anger flaring up whenever religion comes up. And I suspect that many UUs have experienced spiritual wounding and need to restore balance or health, need a process of healing. I know I did when I came to Unitarian Universalism. I had learned that any deviation from acceptance of Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior could risk an eternity in hell. It took decades before I could find and name my own positive beliefs instead of simply denying what I had learned as a child. And that was a process of healing. Healing requires a process. Healing, whether physical, emotional, or spiritual, does not restore us to exactly how we were, but it remakes us in a way that we couldn't have guessed when the process began. Healing is not cure. It doesn't bring us back to what used to be. It leaves scars and blemishes that become part of our newfound wholeness and balance. Healing, of course, can be more than personal. Broken relationships require healing. Organizations, churches, and fellowships can be wounded. And that happens when a church has had a minister who's been alcoholic or depressed or exploited members sexually, or when there's been a deep conflict, or maybe even a split in the membership. And those occurrences are far more frequent than most of us realize. Such wounds take skilled, careful work to heal. And as hard as it can be to be attentive to our ongoing relationships in order to prevent such problems, it's much harder to heal them later. Communities and cultures can require healing. We'll talk about that more in subsequent weeks. For now, I want to name some essential pieces in the process of healing. The first requirement for healing is a recognition that a wound exists. Something is wrong. We hate to admit something's wrong. I hate to admit something's wrong. I'm one of those people who don't slow down when I'm sick until I'm completely sidelined and literally cannot get out of bed. I've been working on this, and I've come to identify problems sooner, but it is against my nature and instincts. And we don't like to hear of the problems when someone else has them, particularly someone we care for deeply. It's hard to hold that feverish baby or listen to our teenager who's lost their boyfriend. But caring includes recognition that something's wrong and that it's serious. The best caretakers face it non-defensively, without trying to fix it, being there without judgment, and letting the solutions emerge slowly from the person working on their healing. I find it helpful to remember that our bodies, minds, and souls have natural healing mechanisms. And for most issues, those are enough if we let them work. In emotional and spiritual healing, it helps for someone to say, "I hear you. I see you. I acknowledge your pain." Too many of us have heard the opposite message in our lives. Don't cry, it didn't hurt that much. There's nothing to be afraid of. Anger doesn't become young ladies. Acknowledgement of our feelings goes a long way toward preparing for healing, what Kim was talking about with the kids this morning. Denial of those feelings deepens the wounds. Different people find different ways to healing. Some paths relate to particular kinds of wounds. 12 steps for addicts and alcoholics, for example. And I know many UUs have struggled with that path, but others have found it helpful. The language of observations, feelings, values, and needs offered by Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication has been meaningful in my own healing, as has reevaluation co-counseling, which is a process of releasing distress, and way back in the last century, feminist consciousness raising. What a brilliant healing process. Therapy is, of course, a commonly used tool. And other paths include art, music, being in nature. You know, that more and more studies are actually showing being in nature is healing physically as well as emotionally. Being in nature, yoga. We have to find the ways that work for us. What so many different modalities of healing share is the affirmation of the reality of your experience, of your suffering, and finding new ways of looking deeply at your experience, gaining perspective that shifts something. Healing requires owning up to our own part in our disasters and naming how we've been disappointed or damaged by others. And often we need forgiveness in some way of others or of ourselves or both. So finally, to the question of the day, what does it mean to be a community of healing? I remember a young African-American gay man who came to the congregation I served in Wisconsin many years ago. And week after week, he came and he'd sit at the back and he'd cry through the service. He heard things he'd never heard before. Affirmations of his sexuality and of his commitment to social justice. Something spoke to his heart. There was space to hold his pain and his whole self that led to healing. The most poignant picture of a healing community that I know of comes from Reverend Kim Crawford Harvey's experience with the Provincetown, Massachusetts UU Church in the early 1980s. A strange new disease was popping up, affecting gay men. And Provincetown attracted gay people. The church was literally dying. She says that when she got there, it had 33 members, and she quickly found out that half of them were dead. Memorial services for church members and for others in the community were an ever-present part of the ministry. And so was ministering to sick people who few outside that church wanted to have anything to do with. In those days, AIDS didn't even have a name. Gay people were almost all closeted. People were terribly frightened by this new epidemic. And Kim describes the Sunday morning services where they gathered in a circle with space cleared in the middle for young men lying on pallets who could not even sit up but wanted to be in church, needed to be in church, where they were affirmed and experienced healing even as they lay dying. What were you preaching about? An interviewer asked her. And Kim said, what I always preach about. How do we love one another better? And that's what it means to be in healing community. To make space for those who need to be healed, even if you need to make room for the pallets. Sometimes to be a healing community, we have to change and grow. We don't stay the same when we watch others change. In a healing community, we let people be how they need to be and encourage them to become more truly their authentic selves. We risk self-examination and deep reflection. We let others change us. Most of all, we love them, us, one another, through the suffering and the pain, and accompany each other even unto death. Or as Anne Lamott put it in her book, Traveling Mercies, broken things have been on my mind as the year lurches to an end, because so much broke and broke down this year in my life and in the lives of people I love. Lives broke, hearts broke, health broke, minds broke. On the first Sunday of Advent, our preacher Veronica said that this is life's nature, that lives and hearts get broken. Those of people we love, those of people we've never met. She said the world sometimes feels like the waiting room of an emergency ward, and that we, who are more or less okay for now, need to take the tenderest possible care of the more wounded people in the waiting room. You sit with people, she said. You bring them juice and graham crackers. I have witnessed such care in this congregation, people visiting those who are sick, sitting with them, delivering meals, expressing concern. Yesterday, here, we held a memorial service for Edith Henricks, a member and leader who has been away for some time but came home to die. In the midst of the laughter and tears, songs and stories, I felt there was healing, even in the presence of death. I'm pleased to be part of a healing community and hope we hold on to that quality, whatever else comes in our time together. I want to share this poem with you from Derek Walcott. And I think what he's talking about is what comes when we have that healing. He writes, "The time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door. In your own mirror. And each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here. Eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you. All your life, whom you ignored for another who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life." We have a few minutes if we have any questions or reflections or all right, in that case, I'd like to close this part of our service with a litany, a responsive reading in the back of your hymnal, number 637. I invite you to join, but understand fully if you're not in the place where you want to say these words. Tomorrow, the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah will begin. So this is the time of the year that Jews use for the kind of self-examination that can create and motivate healing. And as you are willing, please read the italics as I read the regular print, number 637. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible, we forgive ourselves and each other. we begin again in love. For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For losing sight of our unity, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. Thank you for engaging with me in that ritual of healing, or working toward healing. And I invite you to rise in body and or spirit for the closing hymn, number 53, I Walk the Unfrequented Road. From Kathleen McTeague. May the light around us guide our footsteps and hold us fast to the best and most righteous that we seek. May the darkness around us nurture our dreams and give us rest so that we may give ourselves to the work of the world. Let us seek to remember the wholeness of our lives, the weaving of light and shadow in this great and astonishing dance in which we move. So may it be.